It wasn't until my senior year of college that I was going to all the like iBanking interviews, finance interviews. I still remember downtown in New York City, you know, the big names. And at one point I was sitting with like my business suit. I still remember this so well. Like my business suit with this long table of iBankers interviewing me. And one person was like, "So why do you want to be in finance?" And in my head, someone, I could hear it. It was like the Pixar movie, right? They're like, "You don't want to do this. You don't want to do this." And I remember I gave like my BS answer. I just kind of, you know, and I walked out of that interview and I didn't go into another interview. I was like, "I can't do this." And it wasn't until I was 21 that I was like, "Okay, I need to pursue something that I want to do." This is what I say to a lot of females in the industry, that you need to speak up. Not in the way of confrontational speaking up. I don't want to, like, let's go back to, you know, we all want to be good people to work with, collaborative, you know, but speaking up, when I say that, I mean speaking up as a leader. Like, don't be afraid to be that leader on the team. If you have an idea, say it. If you want to create something, like, take the initiative to do it. That's what I mean by speaking up. To get into the industry, one, be focused. In that way, I mean, if you can, since the industry is specialized, if you know what focus you want to be in, you'll get there faster. Of course, if you don't know, I don't want to say like pick something that you might regret later, but let's say if you specifically know you want to be a lighting artist, take a program that will get you to be a lighting artist. Don't take an animation program, let's say, because that's just going to deviate you. So one, be focused, and two, hone your skill sets, your eye. Don't focus too much on software first. Like, focus more on the foundations, and then three, you focus on the software.
Welcome to the VFX Artist Podcast. On today's episode, we have Jasmine Katatikan. You are the co-founder and / CEO of the Academy of Animated Art. It's great to have you on today.
Yeah, so thank
welcome
you.
On the show.
It's great to be here.
How you doing today? How's your side of the pond?
Yeah,
you're in New York, right?
Doing great. It's like one of those iconic New York City mornings in the fall with the leaves changing. There's, you know, and it's not too cold, so it's, you know,
Good. Yeah, if you don't mind, in your own words, just tell us a bit about yourself.
Of course. So my name is Jasmine Katatikan. I co-founded the Academy of Animated Art. And additionally, my professional background, I have nearly 20 years of experience in visual effects, 10 years in VFX, and 10 years in feature animation, specifically Blue Sky Studios, where in both instances my specialty is in lighting. So I was a senior lighting TD, and my most recent in VFX was a CG lead at Framestore. And currently, in addition to running the Academy, I am a tech art manager at Amazon. So I've run a very kind of still very specialized, right, within 3D and lighting, but I have experienced VFX, feature animation. Now it's really fascinating to see 3D in the tech industry outside of the norm. And yeah, and the reason why we created the Academy of Animated Art was really we saw a need for it. Everything that I create, I joke, is like something I wish I had when I was younger. And I should go back a little further, that, you know, I feel like people have these origin stories of how they knew they were going to be in the industry, or if they always knew they were going to, you know, be creative or work on visual effects. So I don't have that story. I always wish I did, right? Where it's like, I saw this movie and I knew instantly, right? So my story was more when I was younger, I was told that, well, I don't want to say I was told. I loved arts. I loved creating everything. You know, I always wanted, I always gravitated towards that. But I'll say at a younger age, I was also encouraged never to pursue arts in a serious way because it wasn't, quote unquote, practical. And I needed to be serious and I should be a doctor or a lawyer or something, you know, more in the traditional sense. And, you know, as a child, you don't know. Like you're told what you're told. Yeah. And I was told at such a young age and ingrained in me that, you know, it did stick. And I'll say I went to college. I started pre-med. I still remember, like, I wanted to apply to art colleges, but in my head I was like, I could never, you know, pursue that. So I went into college. I was pre-med for a year. And then after a year, I was like, I can't do this. I don't see myself going down this path. But then, of course, I was like, but I have to do something practical. So my next way, I decided to major in economics because I was like, okay, family won't be mad at me if I went to economics because I'll get into finance. I'll be fine. So I actually have a BA in economics. And it wasn't until senior year of college that I was going to all the like iBanking interviews, finance interviews. I still remember downtown in New York City, you know, the big names. And at one point I was sitting with like my business suit. I still remember this so well. Like my business suit with this long table of iBankers interviewing me. Yep. And one person was like, so why do you want to be in finance? And my head, someone, I could hear it. It was like the Pixar movie, right? They're like, you don't want to do this. You don't want to do this. And I remember I gave like my BS answer. I just kind of, you know, and I walked out of that interview and I didn't go into another interview. I was like, I can't do this. And it wasn't until I was 21 that I was like, okay, I need to pursue something that I want to do. And that's when I just decided take like Photoshop. To this point, I did dabble, like I did do arts just as my hobby, but I never, you know, went especially into computer arts. I didn't know anything about it. And it's pretty, so I just started learning like Photoshop and Illustrator and things like that on my own. I took a class just at my local town. And I still remember as I was picking up my Photoshop and Illustrator skills, the teacher happened to be a 3D person. And to that point, I never knew anything about 3D, except like, of course, I've seen the movies, but nothing. I didn't know what it entailed. Yeah. And he showed me, he's like, you know, you're picking this up really quickly. Why don't you take a look at this software over here? And I think it was like just 3D Studio Max at the time. And my mind was like blown. I was like, what is this? And that was, I guess, my first like aha moment into like the possibilities of going into this industry. And fast forward, what happened was I got a job as a junior package designer at Godiva Chocolatiers. I still don't know how I did it, but after school. But then the 3D was still in my mind. So what happened is after a year, I decided to dive deeper and I ended up going to grad school for digital imaging and design. And that's where I focused on learning 3D. And that's how I got eventually into the VFX industry and then into features and then to where I am now.
Yeah.
And also creating the Academy. And the reason why I created the Academy is because I was going on recruiting trips for Blue Sky Studios to these colleges. And I came out of it realizing no one knows how to light. Not in a bad sense, but no one's being taught how to light. And I look back to my own expensive grad school experience and I was just like, you know, I never was taught either. Mm-hmm. No one's really teaching anyone how to light. And that's where, me and my co-founder were like, we could fill this hole. Why don't we? And that's how the Academy of Animated Art was born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Crazy and an interesting journey. I guess partly relate to to your notion of parents, or not, I guess parents tend to, or at least as an African person myself, I know that parents tend to want to steer you in a path or the direction that they want to, that they want you to go into, and most of the time it excludes the creative industry, because it's seen as it's devalued, or it's not really taken into account of how important it might be, because parents might be thinking about the financial benefits of the child at the end of their studying, for example. So they don't emphasize, they don't put emphasis on the creative industry. So it's quite common, and it's tricky. It's a shame that it's partly based on lack of knowledge from the person that's giving the advice, but then also it's also because it's coming out of I guess love and for, because they want the best out of their child, so they're trying to push them into the direction that they think. But it's just, yeah, it's inconclusive, and it's just assuming, and just, but I've come to learn that it's all about pursuing what you love doing, and just because that ends up being truthful to you. And I've experienced potentially might be for myself, where as we all do, we choose to specialize in a specific department of the industry. For example, I started off being a generalist, and I found myself much more enjoying Matchmove, which I'm currently specializing in. And at the time, the studio that I was in was like trying to push me to be a generalist and trying to do everything, but it wasn't working out because I wasn't enjoying those particular things. So it's, yeah, nowadays I just believe that it's just, you have to just focus on what you enjoy doing the most, and just that brings you the most joy, and then the most fulfillment, I think. So
I absolutely agree with that. And I mean, that's how I talk to my students all the time, like, what do you love? And that's what I think is so interesting about the VFX animation industry, is that there's so many different facets within it, right? There's so many different different skill sets, different mindsets. Like, an animator is a very different mindset than a lighting artist, than a Matchmove artist, like a compositor. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone has these niches, and I always say, like, you can always find your what you enjoy the best within the VFX, and that also kind of helps you stand out, right? It helps you specialize in defining what you really love, and then focus on that, and that leads to, like, what kind of work you want to do. I know I'm getting ahead of myself, but, like, with demo reels and things like that, like, that reminded me of, like, the generalist versus, you know, a generalist demo reel versus some more specialty one. But I completely agree.
Are you able to tell us a bit about your route to entry into the industry? So how did you end up going from being a graduate to getting your first job? Was that an easy process?
I mean, looking back at it, right, getting your first foot in the door, right, is one of the most beneficial and probably one of the most daunting, and the one that sticks with you. So for me, I remember during graduate school, I started interning at the NYU Medical Center, actually, in medical visualization. And actually, the funny story between that is kind of intentionally did that because I was, in my head, I think I was saying, oh, look, I'm combining the pre-med. So I was, like, working with the medical students by providing 3D content. So
yeah,
that was an interesting thing. But I knew I wanted to get more into the visual effects side of it. I am still based in New York City, but at the time I was also in New York City. I went to NYU. In New York City specifically, there is a heavier base of, you know, VFX post houses than there are, you know, feature animation. So for me, it was just, that was my goal. I wanted to get into one of these post houses. And I remember the way, it's funny, I haven't thought about this, but the way I did it is how we all start doing it, right? I created a reel. I sent it out, you know, to all the studios. Yeah. I didn't really know, like, I didn't know anyone. Although I went to grad school at NYU, like, I didn't have any contacts, right? Besides the teachers or the students I had gone to school with. And I still remember I talked to a couple studios that very first initial thing. I remember I talked to The Mill, and then they were talking more about the runner position, which it's kind of like the starting out position. And then I also, now that I remember, so I did a small snippet at Nickelodeon on a project. But my real breakthrough, if I stand out, was a studio called Rhino Effects. At the time, it was called Rhino Effects. It later became Gravity, and now it no longer exists, actually. So, but it was one of the more prominent studios of the time. And they called me in, sat me down, said, do you want to, you know, do a freelance job? And I was ecstatic. I was like, yes, let me. And at that time, I had already decided that I was going to specialize, like, in lighting. I had already honed in. So it was specifically for lighting. So I never, ever went in as a generalist. I'll say that. And while I was at Rhino, I focused, I worked really hard, and that first job went really well. And while I was there on my first job, at the same time, I got a call from Rhythm and Hues. And this was when, when Rhythm and Hues still existed, but then also it was the first time they were doing their apprentice programs. So they used to do these apprentice programs, and there was a very first iteration of it, and they were doing a lighting apprentice program, which is essentially for recent graduates. It's like their version of an internship where they fly you out there, you work there for, I think it was 1 or 2 months, and then possibly offer you a job after that. So for me, I got a spot in that. So all of a sudden, like, I feel like this happened where it's hard to, like, break in, and then once you're in, it's like things start rolling and just connecting, and the dots start moving really fast. So for me, I end up going to LA to Rhythm and Hues for about 1 to 2 months. It was a great experience. I met some amazing people, and I actually accepted a job, to be honest. I don't know how many people know this, but I accepted a job at Rhythm and Hues. Not like I never signed anything, but I kind of soft accepted it. I came back to New York, and when I came back to New York, and Rhino, that same company, had booked me for when I came back. So I came back and I started working for them freelance while I was in my transition time before I moved to California. And they got wind that I was about to go to Rhythm and Hues, and they're like, wait, we want to hire you. So I remember I felt so fortunate. I had such an early, like, so short of a time after I graduated, probably was only, like a couple months. I was able to have that ideal situation of, like, two offers. And for me, it was that internal thing of, I don't know if you know this in London, but, like, the East Coast versus West Coast, right? New York City versus LA, very two different, like, kind of mindset. So in my mind, I'm like, am I going to pick New York City, or I'm going to choose to go out to LA? And in the end, I decided to stay in New York City. So that, and I ended up staying at Rhino Effects, later to be known as Gravity, for about 5 years before moving on to Blue Sky Studios in feature animation. But yeah, that was I will say, it was like, the big thing for me is just like, don't be afraid to put my work out there. And then once you're in there, I mean, the biggest thing with this industry, or any industry, but I think especially the VFX, since everyone's working so closely together, is like, be a really good person to work with, right? Because I always say this to my students, the analogy is like, you could be the most amazing genius on the computer or whatever skill set you have, but if you're hard to work with, no one's going to want to work with you. They'll take the mediocre person that's good to work with versus the genius that's like impossible to work with, right? Yeah. So just be nice. Just be a nice human being.
Yeah. I think that's very common and very relatable, I guess, everywhere. Because I think I had my first entry, my first foot in the door of the VFX industry, just by my attitude. Because I remember doing work experience whilst I was on my second year of my animation degree. And when I came out, actually, funny enough, I did work experience at the mill as well. And I loved the mill, and I just wanted to work with them. And at the time when I came out of university, they didn't have any positions to offer me, not even as a runner position. So one of the studios I did work experience for, I just literally reached out to them and just said, "Hey, would you guys mind taking me on your lowest wage that you could possibly offer me?" And I guess they gave me an offer to be a 3D assistant, possibly mainly based on the fact that I was nice to work with, and my attitude at the time of being with them during my work experience was quite positive. So they prioritized that, I guess, over my experience or what I knew. So I very much echo to what you said.
I do hiring now, but I'm like, my go-to is skill set, of course, but I, in my, like, one of my highest priorities is like invest in the person. If I see the person has potential and is really good, like skill sets can be learned. That's what I also tell my students. Like, software can be learned, skill sets can be learned, but like your person, like you as a person is super important.
Tell us about how you go about helping your students land their dream jobs on the academy.
Well, I mean, the base way of how we do it is teaching them the skills they actually need to know. Where I know that sounds like, I don't want to say, it's not to say that, you know, universities and traditional colleges were not showing them, but in essence, it was kind of true, right? It was like, I feel like we all, once we get into the industry, then we start learning all the secrets, all the things that, you know, all the professionals are doing, where in college, we kind of get like a hint of that, but it's not really clear. And especially with some aspects of the pipeline are more visible than others, right? Like, I feel like animation's pretty well versed, even compositing to a certain extent. But like the art of lighting definitely for us felt like it was this invisible art that no one was focused on what you actually need to know to get that job in the industry. And it was kind of that catch, like 22 or whatever that phrase is, where it's like, how do you get the job without, like, once you get the job, you start learning what you actually need to know. But then how do you get that job if you don't actually know? Mm-hmm. And it was like, so our focus was, how about we create a school that is the main focus? Like, let's cut out all the extra stuff that you don't need to know in the job, but let's focus on the students on exactly what you need to know. So our program's hyper focused. We cut out all the fat essentially, and get you create a reel that will get you that job. So and our whole thing as well is we are not software specific, because I think that's also another thing when you go into when you get into 3D, and it's so easy to just go straight to software, be like, what software do I need to learn, what where's that magic button, right? Like, oh, just show me the buttons I need to push. And while yes, of course, software is a tool that creates whatever visual that we end up outputting, the story that we're telling, it's actually our philosophy, and I stand by this so strongly, it's secondary, right? Software can always be learned. One, mm-hmm. software is always changing. But the big thing that makes a great artist is the foundation, especially if I talk about lighting, right? It mm-hmm. doesn't matter. Like, our students will be like, yeah. wait, we can do, you know, we just do HDRs and, you know, just like plug it in, press a button, and so on. I'm like, well, mm-hmm. yeah. maybe, but then how are you even going to know it's good lighting if you can't visually see it? You can't, like, mm-hmm. it's like a fine art, right? Mm-hmm. So that's how we focus our students, and we yeah. focus them on being an amazing artist by teaching the foundations of how to see anything and be able to point out and figure out mm-hmm. how to take that image from, you know, point zero to 100 and just wow anyone. And with those, with yeah. that skill set, you can just take any mm-hmm. software and do it. So I think that's like the superpower that we yeah. have at our school. And we apply that to like everything that we teach, where, you know, of course we do have technical workshops that we acknowledge that software is, you know, goes hand in hand and complements any 3D artist, yeah. but also it's not mm-hmm. The single most important thing. So I think that's what really helps stand us out and helps mm-hmm. stand our students out, because when they show their reel, it shows that they know mm-hmm. how to light, right? They know the principles, what makes a good image. And yeah. that at the end of the day is what's going to help them stand out in the industry, right? Because at the end of the day, we're all visuals, mm-hmm. right? It's just like, yeah, the person might yeah. care how you got there. Well, the everyday person's not going to care how you got there, right? But like, I always yeah. say, like, you know, when especially when we're on a deadline, it's just like, just make it look good. Like at the end of the day, just yeah. just make it look good. Yeah. No yeah. one's going to yeah. care how you got there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's essentially how we focus our students. Like, let's make it look good and yeah. craft your yeah. eye.
Yeah. Yeah. What kind of students, I mean, do you have help, and do you have graduates? Do you have, mm-hmm. I don't know, people already in the industry?
Yeah. So our students, the coursework that we have, I will say, is focused on feature animation more mm-hmm. than on VFX. But that being said, we have had VFX specific courses in the past, and we are looking to bring them back. So stay tuned for that, like a specific VFX track. But I will say yeah. our students mm-hmm. have graduated and they've gone to work in VFX too, because it's like the art of lighting translates anywhere. So yeah, they go into VFX mm-hmm. gaming and animation. Yeah. So we've had students like have gone on to like Sony, MPC, then we have like DreamWorks, like and then the feature animation side, like Disney, and that kind of mm-hmm. DNEG, that kind of area. And then we have a lot of gaming too, especially recently. I feel like a lot of people are going into gaming. So it's like the full spectrum. And I'm very curious how it goes, just because just looking at the future in 3D, I feel like 3D is expanding mm-hmm. also outside of the traditional VFX, animation, gaming, yeah. and becoming more streamlined. Yeah. So mm-hmm. I feel like 3D is a really interesting space to be in right now. And to have that knowledge mm-hmm. of 3D is going to open up a lot of doors, even outside of this industry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Yes. Trying to pick your mind here, as I guess in your time being an artist, both in visual effects industry as well as feature animated films, I'm just wondering, what would you say makes a successful application?
A successful application in like a demo reel?
As getting, I guess so, yeah, getting a job in a studio, okay. for example, as a lighting artist, for example.
Yeah. The biggest thing and the first question that you need to ask yourself is who's mm-hmm. my audience? What am I applying to? And mm-hmm. and be specific and cater, I don't want to say cater, but like create an application for that specific audience. And an example is if I'm applying to the Mill, let's say, in their VFX department, and I'm also applying at the same time to Pixar, they're going to be, you're not sending them the same reel. And if you are, then that's not a good thing, right? So like, it's a, they're two totally different audiences. Like the Mill is a VFX company. They're going to want to see VFX work, which means like live action work, you know, how you're integrating things into live action and whatnot. Pixar, if you send them that reel, they're going to just look at you like, wait, no, that's not what we want. If you're applying to a Pixar or a fully feature animation, they're probably going to want to see more of like that kind of work, full animation, possibly more stylized, but it doesn't have to be, right? They're looking for good lighting and shaping, but they don't, they're looking for more of that creative side of it, not necessarily matching to a plate. So I think what makes that, so that's the first thing, right? Whenever you're looking at creating a reel and application, what position are you applying for? If you're applying for a lighting position, do not put effects in there. Do not put modeling in there, right? You want it to be super specific, unless you're applying as a generalist, and then that's a generalist reel. But otherwise, if you're applying to be a lighting artist, only put lighting. Like, I know, especially for students or someone coming in, they're like, I want to show off all my work. I was the same way, right? You just, you want to show off all the things you do. But the biggest thing here is less is more. And if you, it's just like the art, we say the art of lighting is about focusing your eye on what the viewer wants to see. And it's the same thing in this case. If you're applying for a lighting position, you want to focus that viewer on your lighting, and you don't want to distract them in any way. If you also throw some modeling in there, they're gonna, the viewer is gonna be like confused. They're like, wait, is this for a lighting or is it for a modeling? So, and I think that's one of the biggest things I could see for an opportunity, especially for someone first starting out, to really take a look at their reel and look at it from a perspective of someone that wants a, you know, whatever artist or type that, or get someone else's opinion, right? Because I know it's hard to step back and be objective on your own work. And so that's the first thing, knowing your audience, catering your application to that. And because that's the first step. The second step is, of course, quality work, right? Like, have the best work possible. And I always argue that one excellent piece is more valuable than five mediocre pieces. Or like, if you think there's only one that's good, just put that one in. You don't need to add like space holder, you know, like be like, oh, I need more, right? And there's also creative ways where you're like, oh, I just don't have enough content. Like I always say for lighting, and this goes not only for lighting, but other reels too, is you can actually just take one scene. You can make it as easy as possible for yourself. You don't have to overcomplicate it. You don't have to have these crazy anime moving scenes. You can take one scene, and especially for lighting, it doesn't have to have animation. You can do a simple camera animation on it, nothing crazy. Take one scene, light it three different ways. That's it. Put it together on a lighting reel. And for an animation reel, I think that works really well, because you can show the cool, like how you can light three different moods essentially. And then for VFX, the same version of that is, and I know some people might say like, oh, but then I need a backplate and all that stuff. There's so many ways, like in our class, the VFX class, we just show how you can take a simple backplate, put the, a very, I think I had like, I didn't, it wasn't a sphere, like a little sculpture in there, and match it to that plate. And then you, you just want to show them that you can match their shadows. Like you can see that, and it could be as simple as that. And I think that is really powerful in a reel. I actually think like sometimes the simplest reels are the best, especially when you, when you're, when you say like, oh, I don't have that professional experience where you can't put, you know, Spider-Verse on your reel or like anything crazy like that. Like, especially starting out, you don't need it. I know you feel like you need it, but you just need to show that you can see the basic, like you can see, and then you can output it visually, and that's what they want to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, sure, yeah. Great. Yeah, so correct me if I'm wrong. So you've been running your academy for a decade and a bit, right? So how has that journey been in terms of coming up with the idea and setting it up? How easy has it been to convince artists to join the academy, as well as it'd be interesting to know what you've learned through the process of running the academy, both from the side of your being an artist and being an entrepreneur, I guess. It'd be great to hear see the difference between.
It has been quite a journey in its own right, to start start something on the side apart from your quote-unquote full-time job, right? As far as the first part, where, you know, how students come to us and, you know, has that been a difficult thing? I think no, because, well, one, I will say, you know, 3D is quite a small niche, which that's with the business side, I will say. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize how small 3D was until I started marketing 3D. Right. And then that's where the business side, you start learning the mm-hmm. size of the 3D in the whole world. And it's like, wow, we are like really specialty, right? Which actually makes me feel a little bit even better. Yeah. Like, it's really nice. And I often say that 3D is such a small community. We all end up knowing one another. And even like after seeing the numbers, I'm like, oh, that's why we're such a small community. So, and we're a great community, I have to say. I was just lamenting how 3D artists are among my favorite to work with, because we're so collaborative. We don't have the egos as other creatives might, you know?
Yeah.
But that's a total aside. But being said, to find students, it hasn't been difficult in the way that, you know, the way that we started at the academy, it was never, our mission was never like to make it was never money. I'll say that. Like, the mission was always just kind of giving the information that we really wanted students to have or people to have to get that job in the industry. And I think part of it also comes back to my own creative journey of like feeling like, oh, I could never be, you know, successful and be creative. And part of me, I wanted to share that you can and help people, you know, be in the career that they want, the career of their dreams, and it is possible. So, I mean, really, that's how we that's how we lead our school. That's how we market our school. It's just purely like from how we feel. So for that reason, it's like we get really amazing students. They're genuine, you know, we're genuine. So in that regard, it hasn't been difficult in the fact that the people that we get are looking for that similar, you know, we have people career transitioning, a couple engineers that are like always wanting to be in more creative field. During the pandemic, it was interesting. We did get quite a number of physical lighting artists, right? That or theatrical lighting artists that for obvious reasons, they were looking to diversify their skill sets. And that was an amazing thing to talk to so many physical lighting artists and to be able to see them adapt their skill sets into the digital world.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So it was just really nice. And then the other part of the question, which was the entrepreneurial part. This is interesting, right? Because I will say I've always had this kind of entrepreneurial side of me ever since I was young. If you want to do a fun Google search, if you look at Burger Lift, like me and my husband and my other friend, we like did a Kickstart. It was actually quite successful. My husband was actually on Good Morning America. But like, basically, I've always had, and that's this totally apart from 3D, although we did 3D print some of stuff. But like, I've always had this need to, I love taking an idea and making it into reality, right? And I've always kind of had that in me. So I will say, like, the Academy did help feed into that like having just this simple idea, like, hey, we can teach people, mm-hmm. and then, you know, seeing how it scales. And I will say the first 5 years, we were pretty casual about it. You know, working full time at Blue Sky at the time, you don't have too much time, right? But we were doing well, but we weren't like super aggressive about scaling, growing. And we actually closed it down for a year. So there was like a year hiatus in there because we got busy on movies. And then the reason why we opened it back up mainly is because we kept getting messages from students. And they're like, are you coming back? Yeah, sure. When are you coming back? Mm-hmm. And when we saw that there was a need for it, we were like, okay, let's bring it back up. But this time, I think with each iteration, we also looked at how we were going to bring it back. And I do value working, like my full-time job. Like I still, to this day, have a full-time job and running the academy. I won't say that's always going to be the case, but for now, I think it's really important, especially to be in the industry and teaching is really valuable, right? To have someone that's like in it with you. Yeah. So we're not kind of detached from it. But that being said, when we brought it back, we were very intentional in how we brought it back. So the way the academy is designed is that all our content is on demand. It's a rolling admission. You can just enroll and you watch all the learning content on your schedule. And we did this super intentionally because as busy people, everyone has different schedules. People live in different parts of the world. We did not want to limit someone's learning based on where they live, what their schedule was. We wanted to be as flexible as possible. So we did that. And then also in order to get that one-on-one kind of like mentorship through our bundle, all our students get professional feedback on all their work. So whenever they have work to from the exercises, from the courses, or their own personal work, they throw it up onto our student community channels, and they get feedback, like personal feedback on their work from professionals. And that's the secret superpower on how they grow and iterate and are able to get jobs within less than a year, most of them. And it's really amazing to see. So And then as part of like the entrepreneurial side, it was all a learning phase, right? The first iteration of the course was live, essentially. And then we were like, this is not sustainable, right? So then we were trying to figure out not only not sustainable for us as working professionals, but then also for students, right? Because it limits them. It's like, well, I'm not available at this time or that time. And each iteration, so I really believe as an entrepreneur, you need to be super agile and keep on testing and iterating. You're not going to get it perfect the first time. And also growing, like, and I think this speaks to what we're doing now with like having earlier education in animation for students, like, you know, always be curious, always be looking at how you can help your customers more, your students. And my biggest litmus test is like, what would I would want? I always do that. I'm like, what do I want? Mm-hmm. And then I would like basically build that. It's not for everyone, I will say, like building a business and and working, let's say, but I will say if you're it kind of goes with the joy, like if you're going to do something like that, find something that you love and you're passionate about. Because for me, honestly, I think if I had looked at the academy as just like a moneymaker or something that's like purely not a passion project, but something I was like, I'm going to quit my day job and do this full time, whatever, it would have looked very different for me. And I think I would have lost steam too, right? Especially you need to be able to sustain your energy and motivation in order to build these things. So yeah, that's what I'd say.
So then having dabbed into VFX and animated feature animation as well, which do you prefer between the two, as a licensed artist and why?
This is an interesting one.
I guess.
So I have love for both of them, to be honest with you. So I have a really good analogy for this.
Right.
I always, now my big thing is I ask people if they like baking or cooking better. Like, I'm like, do you like to bake or do you like to cook? Right. And then they look at me like in this crazy, you know, they're like, what? I didn't ask you about cooking. I don't know what you're talking about. So this aha moment happened. So after Blue Sky, so I was at Blue Sky for over 10 years in feature animation. And then right after that, I went back into VFX to Framestore, where I had been before, briefly, before I went to Blue Sky. And I still remember my second week at Framestore, and everything was coming back, all the VFX. And I will say, when I was at Blue Sky, I did miss the photoreel. Like, I really love photoreel lighting. There's such an art to it. There's such a, like, it's so satisfying in so many ways.
So I was really excited
to come back to it, because, you know, 10 years in features, and I was like, okay, I'm coming back to VFX. And as I sat in VFX, what I realized, that my aha moment was like, oh my God, VFX to me is like baking and animation is like cooking. Because if anyone, so this is the background of it, baking, you have to be super precise, like in the ingredients, right? You can't just like you can't just like toss some random things in. I mean, you could try, but usually when it happens, it doesn't work. And even sometimes, baking is so precise, and like how you mix things and what temperatures. Like, if you get like something like a little bit something off, it's gonna be off. And like, you'll taste it, and you won't quite know it's off, but something's not quite right. So that's how I feel like VFX is, right? It's like definitely more precise, mainly because you're often like have a backplate, right? Like a live back, and you need to fit it into this plate, and it needs to be invisible. Yep. It's like an invisible art. So if anything is like kind of off, the viewer may not know what it is, but they're gonna be like, there's something off about this. So that's why VFX is like baking to me, and then where animation's like cooking, and the way that you kind of you have a little bit more leeway there, right? You can throw some salt in there. Oh, I need a little bit more salt, you know, pepper. Oh, let me try this thing. And you like, honestly, I feel like when I see people cooking in that way, it's like masterpieces. They come up with these like amazing things. And that's how I feel like feature animation is, because while there are rules, you can break those rules, right? You have like creative license a little bit, like, where's this blue rim light coming from? I don't know, but it looks really good, right? Exactly. So it looks good. That is, to me, the biggest differentiator between the two. I will say also VFX to me, like baking, just feels more technical, right? You need to be more, because you're matching things to something else. It's not all CG. So if you're more technically inclined, where you like with cameras and all of those things, that would be like your wheelhouse. And otherwise, if you just want to like put a bunch of things together and make a beautiful image, and be more creative, like have more leeway in the creativity, then animation would be where you want to be. For me, I have love in both, to be honest with you. Like, I find value in both. I think I it's hard for me to make that decision, but I'll just say some days I like to bake, some days I like to cook. So I'm proud that I have both skill sets. So I'll just leave it at that. But I think that's a good differentiator. When if someone's ever like wondering if they should go into animation or VFX, just ask them that question. Do you like to bake or do you like to cook? And then based on that, they can just,
Just look, Amazing. I love your analogy of that. It makes sense. It's great. So this is, I'm not sure if this question is important, but I'm curious, as being an artist yourself, I'm just curious if you've had any favorite shows, as well as maybe most memorable shots, either good or bad.
Well, okay, one of my most memorable shots is, in a good way, because it really got me out of my comfort zone, was actually at the mill. Mm-hmm. So I did do a small stint. There's a time before I went to features full time, feature animation, I did go back to VFX and I was freelancing for like over a year or so. So I spent most of my time at the mill at that time. Yep. And the first job I went to was, and now I don't remember the client, but it was essentially, I was tasked, and this was a while ago. I'm going to age myself, but it was, they put me on this job, and I still remember the art director was like, okay, you need to make a photorealistic tomato grow. And they were even kind of like, I don't know, can you do it? Like, it was like one of those things, like, here's this challenge, just like organic photoreal, you know, thing. And I remember in my head, I was like, oh, like, I think we all do this when we start a project. We're like, I don't know, can I do it? Like, it doesn't matter how many years experience.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You could be in the industry for like 50 years and still have that. So I remember having that. I was just like, but it was really exciting. It was like this challenge, right? And I was still, I guess I wasn't too new, but it was my first job at the mill. So I remember I wanted to do a really good job. And I remember, you know, I put my headphones on, I sat there and I was like doing all my stuff. And I still remember I was like experimenting even with the little fuzzies like on the, like, and I had never done it before, right? Like adding all these details. And I came out of it and I showed I remember the first time I showed the art director, like my work in progress. And he was just like blown. He was like, oh my God, that's amazing. And like everyone was like looking around. I was like, that looks so good. And to this day, I mean, even after like all the movies I've worked on and everything, it's that commercial. There's a commercial. Mm-hmm. That commercial just like, it sticks with me. Because I think it's one of the first times where I was like, I can do this. Like, look at that. I just like turn this random, gray model, and it looks like a tomato now with the substrate, like with all that realism. Yeah. And I love it. And it's just like, that's the power of creating, right? So that's my biggest thing. Yeah, it's one of my earliest projects. Yeah. And I think that's,
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, it's interesting because usually I would have expected having a big show.
I know. Like, I mean, that's why I smiled. I mean, of course, there's so many shots within, like, you know, there's a Spies in Disguise shot and there's a Peanut shot I really like and a Rio shot. Like, from those movies, of course. Yeah. I worked in the Gecko Geico. He's always going to have a special place for me, too, at Framestore. But yeah, I mean, if I had to pick one, like really one that stuck out as making an impact, I guess, on myself, on my confidence, I think that would have to be it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Right. Cool. I wanted to touch on the topic of being in the industry as a person of color and as a woman, as for yourself as well. I'm just curious how your experience has been just going through the industry and just how you've fared.
Yeah, it's a big question.
Through your journey.
A couple things that I will say, my friends that know me now laugh when I say this, but I'm really shy. Like, I'm a quiet person, but I guess I'm not anymore because whenever I say it now, they're like, what? Have you met yourself? And honestly, my partner actually says that I'm an introvert that has learned to become an extrovert. And I think that's an accurate description. And I will say before coming into the industry, I was still very introverted, closed off, you know. I'll tell you, I was so shy that in kindergarten, I didn't speak for an entire year because I didn't want to talk out loud. Like, I was that quiet of a child and all through my young adulthood, really. And I will say, coming into, I still remember at, you know, my first experience in VFX was also my first experience where I was you know, not, most people are male. I'll put it this way, right? Like, I was always maybe the only female, especially in VFX. Not as much in features as much, but, like, in VFX, I was always one of, like, the only females on the team. And I feel like it could have gone either way coming into it, especially as a quiet, shy female minority. Mm-hmm. I look back on it, I could have definitely have just kind of stayed in my shell, let's say, right? And just kept being that quiet female Asian woman, mm-hmm. which is also, like, partially probably a stereotype. But what happened, which I'm really, I don't know why I decided to do this. Like, it wasn't intentional in my mind. Mm-hmm. But what it did was it brought me outside my comfort zone and then allowed me to establish my voice, actually. Mm-hmm. And I think, in that male-dominated work environment that I learned that I needed to speak up. And not because it was a bad environment that I didn't, like, I needed to speak up in that way. I think it taught me confidence. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm totally thinking about this on the fly, but I think what it was is my coworkers, while they're all mm-hmm. male, I was the only minority female, they were also, this speaks to the industry, they're great people, right? They're these amazing 3D artists, super collaborative, super helpful. And to me, I think that was my first experience being in a male-dominated work area that was also so inviting. And, like, I finally felt like I was home almost. Sure. You know, definitely different from that finance meeting, right? Where it was also all males, but a very different feeling.
Yeah.
So, for me, I think it helped me to open up. It was intimidating, I will say, but the more I spoke up, the more confident I got. And this is what I say to a lot of females in the industry, that you need to speak up. Not in the way of confrontational speaking up. I don't want to, like, let's go back to, you know, mm-hmm. we all want to be good people to work with, collaborative, you know, but speaking up, when I say that, I mean speaking up as a leader. Like, don't be afraid to be that leader on the team. If you have an idea, say it. If you want to create something, like, take the initiative to do it. That's what I mean by speaking up. Not, like, disagreeing. I'm like, that's not, you know, that mm-hmm. like positive speaking up. And
mm-hmm. yeah,
I think from that perspective, it's creating those opportunities for yourself. Because I think if you kind of stay and not, and just do your work, but quietly and not really take that more of that leadership thing that a lot of maybe I don't want to say, because this is a stereotypical thing, I won't say it, but, like, basically to step up, and you maybe need to be more vocal than your male counterpart, right? But mm-hmm. I feel like if you do that, you'll be respected. And that's how I felt, like, you know. And the biggest thing also in VFX mm-hmm. or anything in this creative industry is to show good work. I mean, I think that speaks spades more than anything. Like, yes, to be like really great person to work with, but then also if you can deliver great work, then that's respect. And that's how you kind of build yourself in the industry. You'll become more known, like, people would want to work with you. And as far as, you know, my thing about VFX from a female perspective, and I'll say I came to a crossroads around when I was turning 30 in the industry. I had been in VFX at that point for nearly, like, 8 years or 9 years, and I was actually trying to decide mm-hmm. if I should go stay in VFX or go to the path of feature animation, because I had an offer in both. And it was a hard decision because, like mm-hmm. I said, I like both of them. And one of my key factors, I'll be honest, when I was looking at my decision, is I looked around and I looked at the females in VFX and I looked at the females in the feature animation industry, right? And the difference at the time And this was, you know, quite a, it's probably over 10 years ago, so I'm not quite sure if it's the same, but there weren't that many people and that many women in VFX, right? It was still a very majority male. And also my big thing is, as I was, you know, becoming more senior in my skill sets, I was looking ahead, like, do I see any senior leadership in VFX? And that leadership, what does their lifestyle look like? And this is me being completely candid on the topic. And I was candid when I was trying to figure out which direction I was going to go to. So the big difference to me was there weren't that many female leaders in VFX industry, especially in the artist side of things. And then the one of the few people I could find at the time, she was amazing. She's a CG supervisor. I had a talk with her. And she was probably around 8 years older than me, you know. And I asked her, like, how is it, you know? Like, and she loves it. She loved her work and everything. Yeah. But one thing that stuck out to me when I did talk to her was, like, because at the time I was thinking about having kids and whatnot. And my question was, like, can I have kids and be a female in this industry? And I asked her about it. And she had chosen... Yeah. She at the time, and this is just one person, but, you know, she didn't have a partner in that sense, and she didn't have kids, but that was her choice, mm-hmm. and she just loved working, and that was, you know, the way she worked, which I totally respected that. But my thing was, I kept looking for examples of the other way around, right? I would kept looking. I think it's much different now. Like, I mean, I have two kids, right? And you can find them now. But at the time, it was really hard to find in the VFX industry. Versus when I looked at feature animation, very family friendly, right? There were so many people with families. And at the end of the day, I will say one of my biggest decisions, do I stay in VFX or try feature animation, was that specific concern as a female in the industry that wants it all, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I want the family. I want to also grow my career. And I went into feature animation at that point in my life. I don't regret it. I mean, I loved it. I worked over 10 years in feature animation on all the Ice Age movies and Rios, and met amazing people. I did end up having two kids during that time. But I will say I came back to VFX afterwards, right? And while a lot of the things are the same, what I do feel is different is a lot more openness to that family-friendly lifestyle. Like, a lot more awareness. And I feel like it's kind of happening because the industry's growing. In the fact that the age is growing too, because, like, you know, this industry is fairly young. So I feel like the industry is growing with me. Like, everyone when I started, I felt like we were around my age. Mm-hmm. And now everyone's still around my age, because we're all, like, kind of just getting older together. So we're all just, we're all just having kids at the same time together. So it's something that had to happen, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like you have to put those things into consideration. And it is starting to happen. So, I mean, I am hopeful for that. I mean, there's some things that are still very difficult, right? There's still the hard schedules. And as long as studios stay flexible and understandable about it, I think you can do both in VFX as well.
Yeah, it's been a big topic that I've been discussing in my previous episodes. It's getting better. There's a lot that needs to be done, because, part time working, for example, it's something that could be improved for women and artists transitioning from being working artists to working mothers. And there needs to be a lot more support
it's not easy. And I will say, coming from someone, part of what I do, and I part of another thing that I do to help people, I'm a certified creativity coach, and I help people kind of like design their paths. Like, and what I often say to someone, especially, I will say, especially if you are a female, if you are someone that's already has an established career, right? And you're trying to navigate like the, let's say, the specific example of having a child and a career, I challenge that person to, instead of trying to fit themselves into the traditional mold of, you know, what that kind of design what your ideal would be. And that's kind of like you were saying, like part-time work, but not necessarily only, like, you don't have to say you can't work all the time, but, you know, I think with virtual these days, as an option, you have more flexibility and opportunity to really find a role that could fit you and your needs, right? Instead of trying to mold it, like trying to work your schedule around someone else's schedule is what I'm saying.
Sure.
But yeah, there's so much opportunity there. Mm-hmm. And I also encourage people to outside, not necessarily leave VFX, but there's so much opportunity for 3D in general. And I don't think anyone knows what it's going to look like in the next 10 years, right? With all the other things going on. Mm-hmm. So I think that's also an interesting space. Like, be open to the other things too, because your skill set is transferable usually, right?
Of course.
So anyway, but yes, I agree. I mean, it's not solved for sure. There's so much to be done, and I'm sure we can talk for, you can do a whole series on this. I'm sure you can.
I mean touching on that as well, as we were discussing before, you have your diversity action program on the academy. Are you able to tell us a bit more about that and what that involves?
Absolutely.
And why you created it, I guess.
So the diversity action program was created after about 2 years ago, over a year ago, I was at on a SIGGRAPH panel for DEI with some amazing people on the panel from several studios in the industry. And we're talking about diversity in the industry, right? And it's no secret that the industry is not very diverse. So we were all talking about how can we make it more diverse? And at the time, the discussion was very much like up here on the high level of within the studios. How can we make the existing studios diverse? And for me, I kind of like raised my hand and said, well, if the applicant pool isn't diverse, how are we ever going to make the studios diverse? And this is where the Academy can play a huge role, because I have experience already on developing curriculum and also offering it to anyone in the world, right? It's not just specific to location. And why don't I use my experience and skill set to create a pipeline for a younger generation? So that's how the idea started. I started working with Kathleen from Access VFX based in the US. And I started my idea and started making a plan and pitching it to other studios on, if we can start educating a younger generation, let's say middle school students, on the world of animation and develop the North Stars to develop a whole pipeline, an education pipeline that will foster these students from middle school all the way through high school. So by the time at the end of high school, they either, you know, have a portfolio ready for college or maybe even industry ready. But to give them that visibility, the resources to know all the possibilities of the world of VFX, animation, gaming, like just this creative outlet. And this goes back to kind of my own experience and basically how I said, I like to create things that I wish I had, right? So I would have loved to also foster this idea of you can be creative and you can be quote unquote successful in the financial terms, right? Yeah. And giving students access to this early on. So we pitched this program and we have some amazing founding sponsors, Frame Store, The Mill, Foundry, Ghost VFX, and Zoic. And this fall, 100 mm-hmm. students are going through our beta program now in New York City, in the Bronx, Brooklyn, Harlem, Morningside Heights, and they are going through our first intro, Welcome to the World of Animation. It's an after-school program for middle mm-hmm. school students, and right. it's been amazing. It's been really great to see.
Nice.
It's kind of this hybrid program that we've developed where it is video content by professionals. It's actually taught mm-hmm. by me, and there's in-person people in the classrooms with yeah. them that help them create. They're creating every class, and they're mm-hmm. in this class they're creating yeah. the stop motion animations, and mm-hmm. I already am building out the pipeline. After stop motion, it'll be 2D and then 3D, and then by the time they can mm-hmm. I'm envisioning it's like a choose your own adventure. Once they get the foundations, they could be like, ooh, I want to go into, you know, yeah, sure. rotoscoping, I want to go into animation, mm-hmm. I want to go into effects, like modeling, all of those mm-hmm. things. I'm hoping yeah. that through this diversity action program will be opened up to them, and that anyone in the world can access
yeah.
it. And
yeah.
basically it's going to be the long-term view and solution of how do we increase diversity in the industry, right? We start young.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's yeah. the diversity action program, and it's been amazing. It's just starting. Yeah. And yeah, if anyone's interested in it, reach out,
because
mm-hmm. it's a great thing to be part of.
I love that. I mean, just because from my personal experience, I remember being in secondary school, and I was very much interested in video games, and I was thinking about working in the video games industry, but I had no idea about how to go into that industry. But it was through meeting, being presented a mentor, for example, that although she wasn't in the creative industry, for example, she was able to help me find myself and research and connect me with people that were in the industry, and it just that was very valuable to me coming into the industry that I currently am. So I think it's great. And so yeah, really congratulations on your side. And
yeah, thank you.
You're doing amazing.
I can't do it alone, and
yeah,
I'm really excited for the future and like expanding this program. I think we can do amazing things together, especially love that, you know, we have these founding sponsors. I'm already talking to other schools, possibly like in the industries type schools, like specific animation school, like together. This is where I feel like everyone, if we join forces on this as well, because if you look, like there's a lot of silos going on, like everyone's kind of doing their own work. Everyone wants to do the same thing, but we're all kind of siloed doing it all separately. And my big vision too in this is just like, let's bring our whole industry together in this. And this is just the start. You know, we have some amazing founding sponsors already, but like as we grow it, how amazing it just jointly, you know, it affects all of us. So, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Amazing. How do people get into the academy? How do they get in, and
the
is there criteria to being considered?
You want to create amazing things. I don't believe in putting obstacles up for people that want to create. You know, if you're passionate, if you have a dream, if you just have an idea that you could, like, you want to do it, I welcome anyone who wants to do it. Like I said, a lot of our students have no experience in 3D. Some come from, you know, engineer, like completely different backgrounds. And the common theme is they either, most of them are trying to transition into a career, but some people do it as a hobby, right? But the common thread is I want to learn. I'm curious.
Sure, yeah.
I want to grow myself and my skill set. So if you fit those rules, then just come to the academyofanimatedart.com, and then you can find all that information there.
Sure. Yeah. And so for anyone that might be, I mean, apart from the website, are you reachable anywhere else that is for in case anyone else wants to reach out and connect to you personally?
Yeah, for me, the best place would probably be LinkedIn. So you can find me.
Okay.
And that's where, if you want to personally connect with me, then yeah, let's connect there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. I've got a few more last questions. I'm just wondering, through your experience, what advice would you give to artists in or looking to get into the industry, as well as those on your academy? I mean,
three things you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, yeah, it could be for anyone looking to get into the industry or anyone in the industry.
Okay. Well, to get into the industry, be focused. In that way, I mean, if you can, since the industry is specialized, if you know what focus you want to be in, you'll get there faster. Of course, if you don't know, I don't want to say like pick something that you might regret later, but let's say if you specifically know you want to be a lighting artist, take a program that will get you to be a lighting artist. Don't take an animation program, let's say, because that's just going to deviate you. So one, be focused. Sure. And two, hone your skill sets, your eye. Don't focus too much on software first. Like, focus more on the foundations. And then three, you focus on the software. So that's what I'll say there. And then along with the focus part would be also the reel, right? Focus on, this is where we also kind of focus our students on. We teach our students what you need to get that job in the industry. We're not going to teach you, we're not going to spend your time teaching you something over here that won't matter. Like, whenever we developed anything in our course, we were super focused on your time and being like, what do you need to know? So, we want to streamline it, because you can like spend all this time on, I don't know, crypto maths for like weeks. Do you really need to know that? No, you probably don't need to know that intense. Like, we're going to focus your limited time on exactly what you would need to get into that industry. So those are things like to get into the industry. It's just be as focused as possible. Find a way to hone in your time and your skills to develop those skills, and then focus on the software. Basically, don't go straight to software. I think that's one of the biggest things. People just like go into software tutorials and they get lost there. They get lost there for like years, right? So, and then their reel doesn't look good because they don't know the foundations. They're just trying to mimic like exercises and tutorials, and the person's going to see that. So that's the biggest thing. And then if you're in industry, always stay curious. Okay, this is a big thing. Once you're in industry, it's so easy to fall into that kind of rut, right? Where you're like, I'm in it. Like, I'm just going to keep on, you know, doing my thing. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you turn around, you're like, in a creative rut. Yeah. So I will say, and I've fallen into that, right? How can you not after being in the industry for so long? But what snaps me out of it, and what I suggest for anyone in the industry, always stay curious. So what I mean by that is like, you know, keep like, do a search on like what's the latest is going on, because there's always something new. So it always like piques your interest and also gets you outside of your own box there. I think, too, having a creative outlet outside of your day job is huge for someone. I know we all say we're like, we're busy and we're so tired after a day job. And I don't mean it has to be a 3D thing. It could be anything creative. There was one time in my career I was taking wood making classes. I have wooden stools in my kitchen that I made because it was my way of like, I just need, because we're creatives, right? So like we need that like outlet. And it was so nice to also create something tangible I could touch, because I think in digital world you're like, I can't, you know, I don't have a cup that I can use. But so don't depend on all the creativity coming from your day job, because I think that's how you'll get burnt out and in that creative rut. So find something else outside of your creative day job to help spark that creativity. And even better if it's totally outside of 3D, honestly. And then three, be a leader. Like, don't wait for someone else to give you opportunities. If you want something in your job, in your career track, be proactive. Take action in positive ways to get yourself closer to that. I think that's a thing too. A lot of times we kind of wait. We don't want to speak up. We don't want to say. But like, if you know you want to become a supervisor, if you know you want to, if you're, I don't know, a modeler, but you're really interested in compositing, like, take that initiative to figure out that path for yourself. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I could do like 20 suggestions here, but let's just stop there.
Amazing. I mean, for anyone watching, I guess, yeah, if you have any questions for Jasmine, you can always leave us a comment in our comments in the, on YouTube when we're on YouTube. So, but yeah, thank you so much for your time and for sharing, Jasmine. I think you're doing amazing and you're giving so much value to everyone, and as well as the young generation. And just, yeah, it's very inspirational and impressive. So congratulations and keep doing what you're doing. Thank you.
Yeah.